In the next 3 hours, that is, all this evening, I want to talk about some of the logical implications of what we concluded last night, what we got out of Scripture, that men are rational creatures made in the image of God. And I didn't quote too many verses, but I cited, of course, Genesis 1 and 2 and 3 for the creation of man. And there are many more that deal with the creation of man in the image of God. Men always act purposefully, that is, they have a goal or an aim or an end or a purpose. All those words are synonymous in mind when they act, even when they act impulsively. Yet last night someone said, well, what about the war hero who throws himself on a grenade on an impulse? Well, obviously he has a purpose. He's going to save his friends from being blown to bits by the grenade. Even impulsive actions, actions that we don't have time to deliberate about, are done with a purpose in mind, with a goal in mind. The men always act in their perceived self-interest, perhaps not in their genuine self-interest, but they act in their perceived self-interest. They act according to what they think is best for them. And again, this applies to all men at all times, everywhere. They always do what they think is best for them. Unfortunately, many people have the wrong idea of what is best for them or what is in their interest. Perceived interest and genuine self-interest are not the same things, but they always act in their perceived self-interest. And finally, since only individuals think, that is, only individuals are created in the image of God, only individuals choose or make decisions or plans or act. And all the phenomena of society, all the groups, all the organizations, are the result of individual decisions. All the phenomena of society are the results of individual decisions. Well, let's see what logical implications we can draw from these things. To be human is to be rational. That's simply repeating what we've already established. To be human is to be rational. To be rational is to have purposes. To be rational is to have purposes. We read several scriptures, and there are many more, showing that God acts for a purpose whenever God acts, and men act for purposes whenever they act. To be rational, to be human is to be rational. To be rational is to have purposes. To have purposes is to plan. To have purposes is to plan. To plan is to arrange ends and means. You want me to put all this on the board here so you don't miss a step? To be human, I won't write out is to be. To be human is to be rational. To be rational is to what? Have purposes. To have purposes is to plan. To plan is to arrange ends and means. And you can find many examples of this in Scripture. People making plans, they're arranging ends and means, and you can think of what you do, and the example I gave was buying someone a gift. That's your goal. It's not that, even that isn't your ultimate goal, of course. Your ultimate goal may be to please your father or your mother with that gift. And then you say, well, what would please them? Well, giving them a gift, what kind of gift? A new shirt. And then you back up in your chain of purposing, in your chain of reasoning here. until you decide where you're going to get it, what shirt you're going to buy, and you actually walk out the door to buy the shirt. Okay? To plan is to arrange ends and means. Another way of putting that is to plan is to choose. We already read many verses on choice. You choose your goals. You choose your ends. You choose your means. Now, here's the question. What happens when you choose? Let's look at the logic of choice. When you choose to do something, to believe something, whatever the choice might be, what happens when you choose? Any ideas? Any suggestions? I'm sorry? Well, that's true. There's an action. You choose according to your purposes. That's very good. Yes, sir? You find alternatives. And, I'm sorry? Eliminate alternatives. Very good. You find alternatives and you eliminate alternatives. Sticking with this example I've given of obtaining a gift for someone. You have several possibilities as to what kind of gift to get. You have several alternatives of where to get it. You have many alternatives of how much to spend. All of these things, even the person to whom you're giving the gift, you may decide, well, I won't get this person a gift, I get this other person a gift. There's even an alternative there. And when you make a choice, as the gentleman said, you eliminate alternatives. You eliminate alternatives. What this means is, in every act of choice, you're foregoing something. You are not choosing something else. Every choice involves not choosing something else. That's the nature of choice. Otherwise, choice would not be choice or selection. Yes, sir? Yes, you focus in. And you eliminate the alternative. And out of this concept, to choose is to forego. To choose is to forego. And by the way, that's the way forego is spelled when it's used like this. We're not talking about the foregoing text. It's not spelled with an E. To choose is to forego. That is, to choose is to give up. Any choice you make, there's a next best alternative that you forego. Maybe you're, to stick with our standard example here, maybe you have to choose between getting Dad a shirt or a wallet for Father's Day. And you finally decide to get the shirt. And you have to decide, you have only so much money to spend, and you have to decide what you're going to do with it. And what you forego in making this choice, whether it's the shirt or the wallet, is your cost. To forego is to incur cost. To forego is to incur cost. And this is how the concept of cost is derived from the concept of choice. The concept of cost is an inevitable consequence of making a choice. Every time you choose, you incur a cost. Every time you choose, you incur a cost. The cost of getting let's say you decide on a shirt. The cost of getting the shirt for your dad isn't $20. The cost is getting the next best thing that you might have gotten. It's the wallet, or whatever it might be. That's the cost. That's the alternative of getting that shirt. That's the opportunity, or the alternative, that you have given up. Perhaps there are other considerations. Maybe you're thinking, well, with this $20, let's see, I could order three pizzas and have my friends over. Maybe that's your next best alternative rather than a wallet. And if that's the case, then the cost of buying your father the shirt is a pizza party with your friends. That's what you're giving up as the next best alternative. You're giving that up because you have chosen to buy the shirt for your father. Or you use your own imagination what you can do with $20 as your next best alternative. But that is the cost, and economists refer to that as opportunity cost. That is, this is the opportunity you've foregone. This pizza party with your friends or whatever, rather than buying Dad a gift. That's the opportunity you have foregone. Now, there are many ramifications of all of this. Let me see if I can try to explain some of them. One of them is stated there in the syllabus, only actions or decisions or choices have cost. Things cost nothing. Things cost nothing. How much does a baseball cost? I just told you. How much does a baseball cost? Nothing. The question is, how much does buying a baseball cost? That's the action or the decision. See, there are many questions about baseballs. How much does manufacturing a baseball cost? That's another action or decision. How much does marketing a baseball cost? That's still a third action or decision. The baseball has no cost. What the only thing that costs are the actions or the decisions of individuals. That's because only individuals think, only individuals make decisions, and only individuals have alternatives. Baseballs don't. So a baseball costs nothing. Buying one may cost whatever you could have done with the $5 the ball's going to cost. Manufacturing one, well, let's assume it costs $2 to manufacture a baseball. Manufacturing one, the cost of manufacturing a baseball, is whatever you as a businessman could have invested that $2 in instead. Marketing a baseball, again, if you're the store owner and you want to put up a display of new balls there for your customers, then you've got to decide whether the cost here is worth it. It's taking up floor space in the store. Perhaps you could sell something else. You've got to calculate your alternative of having a display of baseballs there. And your alternative, your next best alternative, is the cost that you incur in doing any of these things. Let me ask you another question. How much does a college education cost?
Nothing.
Nothing. Very good. College education has no cost. Obtaining a college education can be very expensive. Obtaining one can be very expensive. You've got to devote 4 years of your life. Your parents or yourself will have to shell out thousands of dollars, and there are alternative uses for those thousands of dollars. There are alternative uses for 4 years of your life. Perhaps you figure it won't be worth it because in 4 years you could make, what, 100 grand. And that should be calculated into the cost of obtaining the college education. The income that you forego by studying rather than working immediately. That's part of the cost of obtaining a college education. You're foregoing the next best alternative of using your time. Perhaps there are other alternatives as well you need to keep in mind. But don't just assume that because, let's say, the college of your choice charges you $15,000 a year, that the cost of going to college is 60 grand, 4 years times 15. That's not the cost. The cost is the alternative involved here. What could you be doing with those 4 years? I'm not trying to discourage anyone from going to college. Don't get that idea. Everybody should learn as much as they can. But I'm trying to make you think about the true cost of taking certain actions. And that true cost is the opportunity that you forego, the next best opportunity, whatever you decide that might be. Maybe you have an opportunity to be a missionary apprentice for 4 years. And then you have to make a choice. How are you going to spend the next 4 years? Are you going to be studying, or are you going to be a missionary apprentice for 4 years? Are you going to be working? Are you going to be starting your own business? These are alternatives. And you have to decide, and no one can decide for you. You have to decide what the value of each of those things is. And you have to arrange them in your own mind. What's the most important? Is the most important thing getting your education? Is the most important thing being a missionary apprentice? Is the most important thing at this point in my life working? Is the most important thing opening my own business? And you're going to have to do some hard thinking. But try to consider all the alternatives. And then you will begin to understand what the cost of doing any one of them is. Now, I'm not saying that obtaining a college education is the only one with cost. Obviously, it's not. Any one of those things has costs. You know, let's say you choose to become a missionary apprentice. Then your next best alternative, getting a college degree, is your cost. And you have to keep that in mind. But that is what your cost is. It's the opportunity, the next best opportunity that you forego, that you pass up in choosing whatever choice, whatever selection, whatever thing, whatever action you make. Keep in mind that in all of this, there are alternatives. There's a very important principle here in economics. That is that there's a substitute for everything. There's an alternative for everything, a substitute for everything. And sometimes people think about this and say, well, I don't get that. What's the substitute for food? What's the substitute for food? I'm sorry?
Starving,
okay. That's the alternative. But let me ask another question, perhaps get you to think a little bit more carefully about this. Does anyone go into the grocery store and buy food? Do you walk into the grocery store and say, I'm here to buy food. I'd like, $100 worth of food. Just fill up my cart here with food. Probably not. What are your alternatives? You buy specific foods. There are substitutes here. And good homemakers always keep in mind the substitutes. If roast beef is selling for $4 a pound and chicken is selling for $1 a pound, your cost of buying a pound of roast beef is 4 pounds of chicken. That's what you're foregoing for your meat budget that year. You have a small meat budget this year. For your meat budget that week. And a good shopper, a good homemaker, will go into the market and look at the alternatives. Let's assume all the meat is too expensive, the roast beef, the ham, the chicken, whatever. What are the alternatives? What are the substitutes? Well, you might buy eggs, or you might buy cheese, or you might buy some other source of protein for your family. You might buy beans. Beans are a good source of protein. There are substitutes for everything. And when you make these choices, the more informed choice you can make by keeping in mind what the substitutes are, what the alternatives are, the better off you'll be. Well, you still might be skeptical and say, well, what's the substitute? Well, food was an easy one. Now, what's the substitute for water? What's the substitute for water? I'm sorry? Apple juice. Well, they tell you when you go to certain foreign countries, don't drink the water. So presumably you drink a substitute. You're not going to go for a week or 2 weeks without drinking anything. So you drink a substitute. You may drink beer, or you may drink wine, or you may drink fruit juice. But you don't drink the water. There's a substitute for water. There are other substitutes for water, even without going to a foreign country. Sometimes you hear politicians say things like, our projections indicate that we're going to run out of water in this town by the year 2000. And you would hear projections of this sort where we used to live out in New Mexico, since there isn't much precipitation out there. So our projections indicate we're going to run out of water by the year 2000. Now, what's the alternatives to using water? What are those alternatives? What are those substitutes? Brown lawns. Brown lawns. Dirty cars. Those are the substitutes for using water. And if they were to allow the market to supply and the water rather than the government, you would see price fluctuations in the price of water geared to demand and supply. We'll get into that a little bit later. But there are alternatives to using water. Brown lawns, dirty cars, perfume rather than showers. There are alternatives. And you, in making any decision, you have to keep, or you ought to keep in mind, what your alternatives are. We say when people make wise decisions or when we make informed decisions, what we tend to mean by that, not always, but what we tend to mean by it is that they have looked at the alternative possibilities and they have chosen something that seems best for them. It's not something that they have done on the spur of the moment, but they've deliberated about it. And they've made an informed or a wise decision. Things don't cost anything. Well, I'm surprised someone hasn't raised an objection here. What about salvation? Isn't salvation free? Well, let's think about it. Was there no cost involved in obtaining our salvation? I'm sorry? There was a cost. There was a tremendous cost. A tremendous cost. The second person of the Trinity became incarnate and died on the cross for our salvation. A tremendous cost. It's not free in the sense that some people think free is. That is, God just waved a magic wand and suddenly we're saved. That's not the way it happened. The universe is made up in such a fashion that every action has a cost. Every action, every decision. Because to choose is to forego. To choose is to forego. You have to pass something up when you make a choice. Well, there's another implication of all this. How about this idea that I have on the syllabus here? Costs are always costs to someone. Costs are always costs to someone. Keep that in mind. There isn't the government out there absorbing cost. There isn't some amorphous thing called society that absorbs costs. Costs are always costs to some individual. Only individuals make decisions, only individuals choose, and it's the act of choice that incurs cost. Costs are always cost to some individual. Again, don't be fooled by politicians who want to lead you into believing that, well, society will bear the cost, or the government will bear the cost, or something of that sort. All there are is individuals. And some individuals are going to bear the cost in various political programs that are put forth. Sometimes there's a good example of this. It's not being debated right now, but the military draft, for example. Back when I was in college, there was a military draft. The draft wasn't eliminated until 1973. We've had 25 years now without a military draft. But the argument at that point was, and when the draft was instituted actually, was that we can save a tremendous amount of money if we draft people into the army rather than paying them what it would require to persuade them to join voluntarily. You know, it might require us to pay $20,000 a year to a person to get him to join the army voluntarily. But if we can draft him, then we can get him to join, pay him half that amount, and balance the federal budget. You know, we'll balance the federal budget that way. We'll spend only $10,000 per draftee rather than $20,000 per enlistee. And they say this cost just wipes out half the cost of maintaining an army off the federal budget. And this is a way to save cost, we're told. It's not a way to save cost. Now, it may make the federal budget look better. You're spending $10,000 a year on every person in the army rather than 20. But that cost is going to be borne by those draftees. See, he has an alternative. The person being drafted has an alternative. In fact, he has many alternatives. Perhaps if he had not been drafted, he could have made $25,000 a year working. So what is his cost of being drafted? He's getting now paid $15,000 or $10,000 a year. His cost is $15,000 a year. All the government has done by drafting him is shifted the cost from the federal budget, from the taxpayers, to the draftee himself. He's losing $15,000 a year by joining the Army involuntarily. There has been no elimination of cost. The cost has just disappeared from the federal budget and reappeared in his personal budget. Rather than an income of $25,000 a year, he now gets an income of $10,000. And he gets to live with a nice group of guys and go off to the jungles of Vietnam or whatever. All those extra benefits. But there you have it, simply a shift in cost. The cost hasn't disappeared. The cost is always a cost to someone. And unfortunately, government and many times conservatives will swallow that argument. Let's have a draft. You know, we can save $100 million a year or $50 billion a year by drafting people instead of paying them. And that will balance the budget. Well, finally, the last thing I want to mention here is the last statement. Costs do not determine prices. And we'll talk about this more when we get to prices. But choices determine values, prices, and costs. Back in the 19th century, there's my eraser here. This is sort of an introduction to the second hour, what I'm going to say now, because back in the 19th century, as you recall, there were two major schools of thought, the cost of production school and the utility school. And many people, well, they don't know it belonged to the cost of production school. They think that what determines prices of anything, such as this machine here, is the amount of money that was spent producing it. Its cost of production. Not its usefulness. And we'll see some of the implications of this in the second and third hour. But my point here in this first hour is simply to say that the costs do not determine prices. The choices that we make determine the value of things, the prices, and the cost involved in producing them. The choices that we make determine those things. The choices we make in pursuing purposes, the choices we make in arranging ends and means so that we can use certain things to get to where we want to go. We can have use certain means to achieve our goals. And it's those choices we make that determine prices and values and costs. Obviously, when you make a choice, if you choose working rather than getting an education, then that choice determines your cost. Your cost can vary depending on what you forego, what you choose. That choice determines your cost. The cost doesn't determine your choice. The choice determines your cost. And that cost then becomes the basis for making further decisions. Now, are there any questions? We've got a few minutes left here before 45 minutes are up, but there are any questions on this whole issue of the logic of choice? We had that whole, I hope you copied down, that whole series of statements I had there. To choose is to forego. To choose is to forego. And this even has theological implications if you want to talk about God's choice in election. To choose is to forego. To forego means to pass something by, to pass it up. To choose is to forego. To forego is to incur a cost. That's your opportunity that you haven't taken. You've given up that opportunity. Whatever it might be, every decision you make has a cost to it. What's the cost of spending Wednesday evening with me? What was your next best alternative? Is any baseball games tonight? Every night. We had a gentleman here, Monday night. He had to choose. He knew he had an alternative last night. He said, I can be here with you talking about economics, or I can go to opening night for the minor league team. He says, if I go to the game, then my cost is, of course, missing the lectures. But if I come to the lectures, my cost is missing the game. So he made the selection that minimized his cost. Yes?
Well, the other kinds of cost, too, the
cost what? The steer pays with his hide. There's all sorts of, now economists will distinguish between all sorts of costs. They will, and we'll talk about marginal cost later on when we get to marginal utility. But they'll talk about marginal cost, they'll talk about deadweight cost, they'll talk about sunk cost, a variety of different kinds of cost. But at this point, I don't want to introduce those distinctions just yet. Simply want you to get this basic idea that choosing means incurring a cost. Choosing means incurring a cost. There's no way of avoiding it. Now, if that chain that I had up here, starting with to be human is to be rational, and so on and so forth, then you're going to end up, if that's valid, then you're going to end up by saying you can take the first term, to be human, and the last one, and you can get some of the implications of economics in there. To be human is to incur costs. To be human is to incur costs. To be conscious is to incur costs, because you're making choices all the time. Even deciding not to choose. Let's say we make a decision. You've got a major decision to make. You're a young lady, and you have two proposals of marriage, and you've got to make a decision between these two proposals. Say, well, I'm just not going to choose right now. That's a choice. I'm not going to choose candidate A or candidate B. I'm just going to think about it for a while, and I'm not going to choose right now. That's a choice. And the risk you're taking at that point is candidate A or candidate B may eliminate themselves and marry someone else. I don't know. But even that decision not to choose right now is a decision to choose. You're just making a different choice. You're not choosing A or B. You're choosing to delay your decision. And that has a cost. There's no way of avoiding these alternatives. There's no way of avoiding this opportunity cost. It's inherent in the logic, in the definition of choice itself, that whenever you choose, you forego something. And what you forego is an opportunity, and that is your cost. That's an opportunity lost. It's something you've given up, something you've passed up. Are there any questions about this? Right here, okay. At this price, at this point I am.
Is that always determined by value? Is that always subjective to the something that earns more or less?
Yes. All your valuing is subjective. And we're going to get into that in the next hour when I talk about subjective value. That doesn't mean there are no objective standards, but all your valuing is subjective. And I'll explain that when we get into that hour on subjective value. Any other questions? Does everybody get this so far? To choose is to incur costs.